Iron Sunrise, Disc 12.
Hext stood at the back of the auxiliary bridge behind Jamil and Friedrich, watching as the husks of the two puppetized bridge officers maneuvered the Romanov in toward the darkened, slowly precessing space station. Similar events would be unfolding in the engine control room above the drive kernel containment, where Matilda was personally directing the engineering crew who had been selected for the privilege of serving the remastered. But the engineering spaces didn't have anything like the view that filled the front wall of the cramped secondary flight deck. The gigantic stacked wagon wheels of old Newfie spinning in stately splendor before the wounded eye socket of eternity. A red-rimmed hollow gouged from the interstellar void by the explosion of Masco Prime 6 years ago.
Impressive, isn't it?
She asked Franz.
Yes, boss.
He stood beside her, hands clasped behind his back to conceal his nervousness.
They did it to themselves.
She shook her head slowly, almost disbelievingly, with barely any prompting from you, Scott.
How hot is it out there?
Franz asked nervously.
Not too bad.
Friedrich leaned past one of the zombies to examine a console display.
Looks to be about 10 centigrades per hour. You'd get sick in an hour or two if you went out there in a suit, but it's well within tolerances for the ship's shielding. And the station is probably all right, too, for short stays.
One of the puppets murmured something to the other, who leaned sideways and began working his way through a stack of thruster control settings. Jamil had edited their parameters so that they thought they were alone on the bridge. They were completely focused on the docking maneuver.
It's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen,
Portia murmured, staring at the sheets of violet and red smoke that circled the shock ring of the star's death.
And the most ugly.
Her hands tightened on the back of the command pilot's seat. With a visible effort, she tore her concentration back to the job at hand and glanced at Franz.
Is the hostage ready? How about you? Are you clear on what you've got to do?
Yes, boss.
Franz nodded, trying not to show any sign of emotion. She smiled at him, a superficially friendly expression that set his teeth on edge. Part of him wanted to punch her in the face, to kick and bite and rip with his own hands until she stopped moving. Another part of him wanted to cast himself at her feet and plead for forgiveness.
We can find the passengers in the evacuation stations and dump the corridors to vacuum. Then I make the girl present herself and bring her to you and the others on the station.
May I ask how we're evacuating?
You may.
Portia stared at the screen pensively as the puppets muttered to each other, scheduled a course adjustment to nudge the multi-megaton mass of the liner closer toward the docking tree at the hub of the enormous station. Methane tanks drifted huge and bulbous at the other end of the spindle, rimed with the carbon monoxide frost deposited by the passing shockwave that had swept over the station years before.
Boss?
Franz asked nervously. The Heidecker will be arriving in a day and a half. We simply remove the puppets and disable the liner's flight control network before we leave. There's enough food aboard, with the resources on the station, to keep them alive for a couple of months, by which time we'll be able to send a cleanup team big enough to process them all. If they don't cooperate, the cleanup team can use the station for target practice. Nobody will find out for decades. Once they're processed, we can ship them off to one of the core worlds on the Romanov for reprocessing. This is as good a place to store them as any, don't you think?
But the records, if anyone finds them, relax.
They won't. Nobody's been back here in years. The station's too uneconomical to recommission without a destination in mind, and too far off the track to be worth retrieving for scrap. All we have to do is retrieve the stolen records, send out the signals via the station manager's intelligent channel, and configure the Romanov as a prison hulk for a couple of months.
What if they...
Franz stopped. You were thinking about the missing bridge officer, weren't you? Hext prodded. Don't bother. She's a trainee, and she's clearly not up to taking back the ship on her own, wherever she's hiding out.
We'll leave you a guard detachment after the Heidegger gets here, just to make sure they don't try anything silly. She smiled broadly. If you can turn your mind to thinking up creative ways to booby-trap the flight deck after we've docked, that would be a good thing. Franz glanced at the screen and resisted the urge to rub his palms on his trousers. You want me to stay behind? With the prisoners? He asked. Not only that, I want you to oversee their processing. She stared at him, inspecting his face with minute interest. If you do well, I'll take it as a sign that you are worth persisting with. I was impressed by the way you handled the clown, Franz. Keep me satisfied, and it will be worth your while. Great rewards come to my willing supporters. Her smile faded, a sign that she was thinking dark thoughts. Now I think it's time you winkled out the girl. The evacuation assembly point for B deck was near the rim. A radial corridor ran out from it to an emergency airlock that breached the ship's inner hull. Worried passengers converged on it, some of them carrying bags stuffed with their essentials, others empty-handed. A few scattered stewards, harried, and just as worried as the passengers, urged them along. Wednesday trailed after Rachel, holding back just a little. What do you think they're doing, Mom? She asked. Mom, who do you think you're kidding? She asked herself ironically. Every time she used the word, she felt a tiny stab of betrayal. Although it was unfair to Rachel, the woman from Earth had done far more for her than she'd had any reason to expect. I'm not sure, Rachel looked worried. It's possible there's some trouble with the ship's systems since the incident that injured the bridge crew. Blink, blink. Wednesday nodded and pulled a face, sighed theatrically. Am I looking bored yet? She thought. She glanced around. There weren't that many passengers. They were mostly first-class travelers, rich business travelers, and minor aristocracy from those worlds that had such. Where's Frank? She wondered, searching frantically while trying not to be obvious about it. If I got him into this... Excuse me, where are we going? A worried-looking man asked Rachel, plucking at her arm. You see, nobody's told us any... Don't worry, Rachel managed a forced smile. We're just going to the evacuation station. It's only a precaution. Doesn't mean they're going to evacuate us. Oh, good. Still looking worried, he scampered ahead, leaving them in an island of quiet. Nervous? Martin asked quietly, making Wednesday jump. Nervous? She glared at him angrily. If they've hurt... They rounded the curve of the corridor and passed the red-painted crash doors recessed into the wall and blocking access to the airlock tube. The evacuation station was a circular open space about 8 meters across, as crowded and nervous as a diplomatic cocktail party where the ambassador had just announced his resignation. There was standing room only and a couple of stressed-looking stewards holding their arms across the entrance to the evacuation airlock just in case some of the more skittish passengers decided to rush it for some reason. May I have your attention, please? A tall blonde man with hollows under his eyes called from one side of the room. Would you mind clearing the inner pressure doors, please? That's right, if you could move into the room, we can get this over with cleanly. Oh, shit. Wednesday tensed and ran her right thumb up the frogging she'd had her precious smart jacket grow. She dialed it into a turquoise tailcoat. It felt stiff and heavy, and simultaneously thin and vulnerable, stretched to cover more than its pressure limit. It'd be useless in an emergency depressurization. The whole idea of walking into an airlock when the bad guys had taken the ship struck her as the height of idiocy, even wearing her lacy white shalwar trousers over pressure leggings and boots. But people behind her were pushing forward, and the doors back onto the corridor were dropping slowly down, sealing off her route back to the cabins. What's... she began, but Martin gripped her hand. Wait, he said tensely. We have an announcement to make, the blonde man called. If I can have silence, please. That's better. He smiled thinly.
We're about 15 minutes from docking with the repair station. When we do so, you may be asked to evacuate onto the port ring in good order. We won't know for sure if that will be necessary or if you can return to your rooms until after we dock. If you have to evacuate, try to do so in an orderly way, no pushing. Give everybody room to move. Keep walking once you hit the dock side until you reach the designated assembly area. Remember, this isn't a critical pressure evacuation. There's no risk that you'll end up breathing vacuum, and you don't need to run.
He looked around the room. There was a brief mutter of comment, but no dissent.
And now for another matter, he announced. I've got a special message for Victoria Stroger, who I believe is in this room somewhere.
Wednesday jerked involuntarily, feeling Martin's fingers dig into her wrist.
Your friend Frank is down on F-deck. He sends his regards. As a rule, we're trying to keep everyone together at their designated evacuation stations, but if you want to see your friend again, you can step forward now and I'll take you there.
His smile widened.
This is your only chance, I'm afraid. Once we dock, it'll be too late.
Wednesday glanced between Rachel and Martin frantically. She wanted to scream, "What do I do now?" Martin looked puzzled, but dawning horror was writ large on Rachel's face. The man at the front was still talking, something about evacuation procedures. It was so slickly done, the message, that she half doubted she'd heard it.
"Go," Rachel mouthed at her, a quick scribble on her paper pad. "You got value. Play for time," she wrote.
But Wednesday looked back at Martin, who was now clearly worried.
"They've got Frank," she thought frantically. "They've got Frank."
She'd been afraid, walking in there, that it was a trap, but she hadn't realized just what kind it would be. Rachel was still scribbling. "Old Newfie is your home ground." Realization dawned. Wednesday nodded, feeling sick in the pit of her stomach.
"Okay," she said.
And before she could change her mind, she began to shove through the crowd of bodies toward the front of the room, where the blackmailer was waiting for her.
"So who the fuck are you?" Wednesday asked belligerently. "And what do you want?"
The woman in charge of the hijacker smiled indulgently.
"You can call me Portia, my dear. And all I want is a little talk."
Wednesday sized her up suspiciously. The blonde guy stood behind her, blocking the doorway, and there were a couple of guards, one of them manning a comms console, the other watching her from behind the leader, but they'd made no move to search her or apply restraints, or anything. This Portia woman wasn't what she'd expected either. She wasn't angry or evil-tempered, or anything. Nor was she wearing one-piece overalls with built-in pressure seals like the others. In fact, she seemed friendly and slightly indulgent.
"I'd be indulgent, too, if everything was going my way," Wednesday warned herself. "What do you want?" she demanded. "And where's Frank?" "Your friend isn't here," Portia sniffed. "He's in a suite on B deck that hasn't, been evacuated."
She flashed Wednesday a grin, baring perfect teeth at her.
"Would you like to talk to him? Just to prove that he's all right? My offer was genuine, by the way, when I said you could see him again. In fact, I'll go further. If you cooperate fully with me, and once our business is over, you can have him back. Intact."
"You're a liar. Why should you?"
Wednesday regretted the words almost before they were out of her mouth.
"Stupid, goading her when she holds all the cards," she thought to herself.
But Portia didn't take it amiss. "Over the years, I've found that a reputation for keeping my word is a valuable tool. It makes negotiating much easier if everybody knows you're trustworthy. You, don't know that yet, but if you want to talk to your friend..." Wednesday felt a sick tension in her gut.
"Yeah, I'll talk to him. Shit, if he's all right."
A second interior voice kicked in, icily cold.
"They'll be watching you both for leverage. Make no mistake, she's not doing this just for you."
"Get the prisoner on the secure terminal," Portia told the guard at the desk. Wednesday moved to sit down in the offered chair. The camera's eye view certainly showed her Frank. Her breath caught. They'd put him in a chair and taped his arms down, and he looked ill. His skin was sallow and dry. He looked up at the camera, bleary-eyed, and started.
"Wednesday, is that you?"
he said, his voice rasping.
"It's me." She clasped her hands behind her back to keep from fidgeting. "Are you all right?"
He rolled his head sideways, as if trying to see something behind the camera. After a moment, he replied,
"No, I'm a bit tied up."
He shook his head.
"They got you, too. Was it me?"
"No,"
she lied, guessing what the truth would do to him. Behind the terminal, she saw Portia make a little tight smile.
"Bitch."
"Reality check. What was the last thing I did the night before the, accident?" she asked, hoping desperately that he'd get it wrong, that he was just a machinima avatar, and that she'd been caught but he remained at liberty.
"You made a phone call."
He closed his eyes.
"They kept my throat under block too long," he added. "Talking hurts."
"That's enough," said Portia.
The comms specialist leaned over and killed the connection before Wednesday could protest.
"Satisfied?"
she asked.
"Ha!"
Wednesday scowled furiously.
"So you've got us," she shrugged. "What do you fucking want?"
The blonde guy at the back of the room, the smiling blackmailer from the evacuation bay, cleared his throat.
"Boss?"
"Tell her, Franz." Portia nodded agreeably, but Wednesday noticed that when she spoke to her soldiers, her smile peeled away, exposing a frigid chill in her eyes.
"You misplaced something belonging to our, predecessors," Franz said.
He looked uneasy.
"We know you hid it on the station. We want it back. When you return it to us, we have a couple of errands to run, then we'll be leaving."
He raised an eyebrow.
"Boss?"
"Here's the deal," Portia said easily. "You take us to the items you left behind. We'll bring your friend Frank along so you can see him and those nosy diplomats you were hiding out with. No, we weren't taken in by that business with the passports."
"Do you think we're stupid? It was easier to leave you hiding out in their cabin. That way you immobilized yourselves, saving us the trouble. But I digress. If you give us what we want, we'll leave you on board the station when we go. Our own ship will be arriving here soon. We'll send a rescue and salvage expedition for the liner and everybody aboard it as soon as we're clear. Despite what you're thinking, we're not interested in killing people, wholesale or retail. There's been a change of management at the top, and our job is to clean up after them."
"Clean up?" Wednesday said skeptically.
"Clean up what?"
Portia sighed.
"My predecessor had some rather silly plans to, build himself an empire."
She flashed Wednesday that grin again.
"I'm not going to make any excuses. You wouldn't believe him anyway. To cut a long story short, he succeeded in taking over some key members of the strategic operations staff in the Moscow government. His ambitions were bigger than his common sense. He wanted to short-circuit a very long-term project of ours, of the whole of the remastered, actually, by developing a device that's one of a class known collectively as causality violation weapons. He also wanted to carve out an empire for himself as maximum leader, an interstellar empire. It was quite the audacious plan, really. It's a very good thing for all of us that he was no good at the little detail work. Unfortunately," she cleared her throat, "the weapons lab on Moscow apparently tried to test the gadget prematurely. Something went wrong. Spectacularly wrong."
"You're trying to tell me it was an accident?" Wednesday demanded.
"No."
Portia looked uncomfortable for a moment. "But the idiot responsible, the treacherous idiot, I stress, is, dead. As a direct consequence of the event. In fact, it's my job to mop up after him, tidy up the loose ends, and so on. Which includes stopping the R-bombs, I suppose you know about them, by sending the abort codes. which were in the bag you took, taken from the station administrator's desk, along with a bunch of other records that are of no use to you, but of considerable interest to me, insofar as they'll help me root out the last of his co-conspirators.
Oh,
Wednesday thought for a while. So you want to clear everything up? Make it all better?
Yes.
Portia smiled brilliantly at her. Would you like to help us? I stress that to do anything else would amount to complicity in genocide. Wednesday straightened up.
I suppose so,
she muttered with barely concealed ill grace. If you promise this will put an end to it all and nobody will get hurt?
You have my word.
Portia nodded gravely.
Shall we do it?
Behind her, the one called Franz opened the door.
Darkness, stench, and a faint humming. Over the past 2 days, Steffi's world had closed in with nightmarish speed. Now it was a rectangle 2 meters long, 2 meters high, and 1 meter wide. She shared it with a plastic bucket full of excrement, a bag of dry food, and a large water bottle. Most of the time, she kept the torch switched off to conserve power. She'd spend some time trying to read, and she'd done some isometric exercises, careful to ensure there was no risk of kicking the bucket over, and spent some more time sleeping fitfully. But the boredom was setting in, and when she'd heard the announcement through the wall of her cell telling them to prepare for evacuation, it had come as a relief. If the hijackers were offloading the passengers, it meant there wouldn't be anyone to get in her way when she did what had to be done. A liner the size of the Romanov didn't vibrate, didn't hum, and didn't echo when docking onto a station. In fact, any sound or vibration would be a very bad sign indeed. Shockwaves overloading the anti-sound suppressors, jolts maxing out the electrographics, supports buckling and bulkheads crumpling. But the closet Steffi had helped Martin build her false wall into adjoined the corridor, and after the muffled sound of a slamming door, she'd heard faint footsteps, then nothing. The silence went on for an eternity of minutes, like the loudest noise she'd ever heard.
I'm going to get you, she repeated to herself. You've taken my ship, rounded up my fellow officers, and...
An echo of an earlier life intruded. Backstabbing bastards. She wondered about Max, in the privacy of her head. He wasn't likely to have avoided the hijackers, and they might think they could use him against her. If they even cared, if they knew who she was and what she could do. Fat chance. Steffi was grimly certain that nobody knew the truth about her, nobody but Sven. And if her partner and frontman had talked, they'd have torn the ship apart to get their hands on her. Svengali knew things about Steffi, and she knew things about him that would have gotten either of them a one-way trip into the judicial systems of a dozen planets if the other ever cut a deal. But Steffi trusted Svengali completely. They'd worked together for a decade, culminating in this insanely ambitious tour, wet-working their way across the galaxy, two political pest control operatives against an entire government in exile. The promised payoff would have been enough to see both of them into comfortable retirement if the backstabbing scumbags who were paying for the Grand Slam hadn't panicked and hijacked the ship instead. And now, with the plans wrecked and Svengali quite possibly out of action, Steffi was seeing red. After an hour of careful planning, she turned the torch on and put her ear to the closet wall. Nothing. Here goes, she mumbled to herself, picking up the box cutter Martin had left her. The tiles he'd had the fabricator spam out were rigid and hard to cut at first, stiffened by the fine copper wire mesh of the Faraday cage threading through them. She stabbed at one edge, then worked the blade through and began tugging it down from the top of her hideaway. Grunting with effort, Steffi sawed a slit all the way down one side of the wall, then continued sideways at the bottom. Finally, she squatted
and peeled the corner up toward her. Fumbling in the twilight, she found her way out, blocked by something solid. It brought it all home to her, and suddenly the stinking darkness seemed to close around her head like a fist. Gasping, she shoved as hard as she could, and the obstruction shifted. A minute later, she found the light switch in the closet. "Well, that's done it," she told herself, heart pounding and stomach fluttering with nervous anticipation. "If they're out there..." She opened the door. The suite was empty. "Huh?" She took 3 steps forward into the day room, reveling in her sudden freedom to move, taking in deep breaths of the clean air, suddenly recognizing for what it was the fetters she'd spent more than a day immersed in. Glancing around, she saw the desk. There was some kind of notepad on it, paper covered with writing in dumb pigment. Frowning, she picked it up and began to read by torchlight. "All passengers moving to evac stations, arriving old New Fee Station on Moscow System periphery half hour. Help? Maybe evacuating ship. Not trust Lieutenant Commander Fromm. The remastered good at controlling people. Fromm is a puppet. PL is now a ubiquitous surveillance net. Query officer bypass working? Feel free to use the fabricator in the trunk. It makes good toys, and you've got blanket resource access permissions." Steffi felt her knees go weak. The thing in the closet was a general-purpose fabricator. A cornucopia machine? She forced herself to sit down for a moment and close her eyes. "Fuck," she said softly. The possibilities were endless. Then she took a deep breath. Query officer bypass working. If the hijackers were still aboard and had turned the liaison network into a surveillance grid, they would already know about her. But if they had evacuated the ship, she might just have a chance, especially if they'd left the line crew authorization system in place. Steffi thrust her left hand into her pocket and pulled out her control rings. Sliding them onto her fingers one by one, she mouthed the subvocal commands to start up her interface. "If they're watching, they'll be here any moment," she told herself. But nothing happened. The timer began to spiral in her visual field, and the twist of a ring told her that she had new mail, but there was no knock on the door. Slowly, she felt the ghost of a grin rising to her face as she scrolled rapidly through the ship's status reports. In dock, evacuation systems tripped, drive systems tripped, bridge systems shut down, life support on homeostatic standby. "Thought you'd nailed down all the loose ends, did you? We'll see about that." She turned back to the closet and leaned over the control panel of the fabricator. "Give me an index," she snapped at it. "Show me guns, all the guns you can make."
Messengers. Old Newfie's basic systems had continued to run while the radiation shock front swept over it. Humans might be gone, life support might be dead, algal ponds crashed, macroscopic plants killed, even the cockroaches fried by the kilogray radiation pulse. But the multi-megaton wheel continued to spin endlessly in the frigid void, waiting for an uncertain return. Wednesday's breath steamed in the darkness of the docking hub. One of Porsche's minions had rigged up floodlights around the boarding tube from the liner, and stark shadows cut across the gray floor toward the spin coupling's owner. Dim silhouettes drifted slowly round, rotating between the floor and cathedral-high ceiling over a period of minutes.
"Can you hurry it up a bit?" Porsche told her phone. "We need to be able to see and hear."
"Any moment. We're still looking for the main breaker board."
Damiel and one of the other goons had headed off into the station to look for a backup power supply, wearing low-light goggles and rebreather masks in case they hit a gas trap. Getting the main reactors going would be difficult in the extreme. It would take weeks of painstaking work, checking out the reactor windings, then inching through the laborious task of bootstrapping a fusion cycle, but if they could find a backup fuel cell and light up the docking hub, they'd be able to rig a cable from the Romanov to the hub's switchboard and provide power and heat and air circulation to the administrative sectors.
Old Newfie had once supported thousands of inhabitants. With a source of power, it could support them again for weeks or months, even without reseeding the life support and air farms.
"So where did you hide the backup cartridge?"
Franz asked Wednesday, deceptively casual. Wednesday frowned.
"Somewhere in the police station. It was years ago, you know."
She stared at him. Something about the blonde guy didn't ring true. He looked excessively tense.
"You'll need power for the lifts in order to reach it."
"This is no time for games," he said, glancing at Hext, who was listening to her calm. "You don't want to cross her."
"Don't I?"
Wednesday glanced up at the axial cranes, skeletal gantries, looming like lightning-struck trees out of the darkness high above.
"I'd never have guessed."
Portia nodded and lowered her comm.
"We have lights," she said, a note of satisfaction in her voice.
Moments later, a loud clack echoed through the docking hub. The emergency floods came on overhead, casting a faint greenish glow across the floorscape.
"We should have heat and fans in a few minutes," she added, sounding satisfied.
A nod at one of her other minions, a woman with straight hair the color of straw.
"Start moving the passengers aboard, Matilda. I want the passengers off that ship in 10 minutes.
"You're evacuating it?" Wednesday stared.
"Yes. We seem to be missing a junior flight lieutenant. I don't want her getting any silly ideas about flying off while we're all aboard the station."
Portia smiled thinly. "I'll admit that if she can hide from a ubiquitous Seldar net and shoot her way past the guards who are waiting, she might have a chance. But somehow I doubt it."
"Oh."
Wednesday deflated. She felt her rings vibrate, saw a pop-up notice in her left eye, new mail. She tried to conceal her surprise.
"Mail? Here?"
"Why were you killing our ambassadors?" she asked impulsively.
"Was I?"
Hext raised an eyebrow.
"Why were you hiding out with a pair of spooks from Earth?"
"Spooks?" Wednesday shook her head in puzzlement.
"They wanted to help, once you hijacked the ship."
Portia looked amused.
"Everybody wants to help," she said, raising her comm to her mouth.
"You, whoever I'm speaking to, you're done?"
"Yes, it's me, the two diplomats from Earth, and that fucking busybody journalist.
We're going to the station administrator's office by way of a little detour along the way. Round up the diplomats and the scribbler. Take a backup and meet us at the station admin office in half an hour. Send Zorsch and Anders to the communications room with the key and have them wait for me there. I'll be along after I've finished with the other errands. Understood?"
"Right. See you there."
She focused on Wednesday.
"It's quite simple." She took a deep breath. "I'm here to tidy up a huge mess that was left by my predecessor. If I don't tidy it up, a lot of people are going to die, starting with your friends who I just mentioned. Because if I fail to tidy up the mess successfully, I will die, and a lot of my people will die, and killing your friends will be the easiest way of conveying to you and them just how angry that makes me. I don't really want to die. And I'd much rather not have to kill anybody, which is why I'm telling you this, to make sure you know it isn't a fucking game."
She leaned toward Wednesday, her face drawn.
"Have you got the picture yet?"
Wednesday recoiled. She swallowed.
"Yes. Good."
Something seemed to go out of Hext, leaving her empty and tired.
"Everybody thinks they're doing the right thing, kid. All the time. It's about the only rule that explains how fucked up this universe is."
A wan smile crept across her face.
"Nobody is a villain in their own head, are they? We all know we're doing the right thing, which is why we're in this mess. So why don't you show me where this police post is, and we'll dig our way out of it together?"
She was shaking, Wednesday realized, distantly. Shaking with rage.
"You fuck monster, you killed my parents, and you want me to cooperate?" she thought to herself, but it was impotent fury.
Confronted with someone like Portia, there wasn't anything she could see that would make things better. No sign of any way out that didn't involve doing what the remastered wanted. Which was why they were the remastered, of course.
not villains in their own heads.
This way.
You have mail, blinked in her visual field as she walked across the frost-sparkling metal of the dock toward the empty shadows of the lift shafts. Almost instinctively, she twitched her fingers to accept.
Hello, Wednesday, this is Herman. If you are reading this message, you are back on the old Newfie communications net, which was not shut down when the station was evacuated. Please reply.
Are you all right? Asked the one called Franz, reaching for her elbow as she stumbled.
Just a slip, I see,
she muttered. She thrust her hands into her pocket to conceal her finger-twitched response.
I'm here. Where are you? Send.
The reply arrived as they waited while Jamil went over one of the lift motors with a circuit tester. It was icy cold in the station. Breath clouded the air, sparkling in the twilight overspill from the lights.
I am where I always was. My causal channel is still linked into the station network. The station's other comms channels are still operational, including the diplomatic channel U-Hext intends to use to send the stop code to the Muscovite R-bombs. Hext acquired one of the stop codes from her predecessor, U. Scott. There is another code key in the station administrator's safe in the central control office. Svengali and his partner successfully panicked the surviving Muscovite diplomatic corps. My highest probability scenario is that Hext's objective is to take control of the Muscovite R-bombs under cover of decommissioning them, then to use her ownership of the R-bombs to convince both the Muscovite ambassadors and the Dresdener authorities that the R-bombs are committed to an irrevocable attack. This will lay the foundations for a remastered takeover of Dresden. The current junta members will flee, providing promotion avenues for remastered proxies and generating public disorder in an anticipation of an attack that will never arrive. The lift motors creaked and hummed, and lights flickered on inside the car.
Seems to be working, said Jamil, poking at the exposed control panel. It's got a separate flywheel power supply that I'm spinning up right now. Everybody in. What floor are we looking for? He asked Wednesday.
Fourth,
she mumbled.
Expect no mercy from the remastered. They will honor any promises they make to the letter, but semantic ambiguities will render them worthless. Important note, you, Franz Bergmann, is a malcontent. Prior to Hext's arrival in Septagon, he and his partner were preparing to defect. Hext's hold on him is his partner's upload data. An offer of medical reincarnation coupled with the upload record may constitute leverage in his case. Your old implant conforms to Moscow Open Systems specifications and is therefore able to receive this message. Unfortunately, owing to a protocol mismatch, I cannot contact other people directly. Please copy and forward this message to Martin Springfield, Rachel Mansour, Frank Johnson, by way of your Septagon-compliant interface.
The lift squealed to a halt. Wednesday shook herself.
Where now? Portia demanded. Where?
The doors opened onto darkness. The air was freezing cold, musty, and held a residual fetor, the stench of long-dead things that had mummified in place.
Can I have some light?
Behind her, a torch flared into brightness, sweeping long shadows into the corners of the curving passage. Wednesday stepped out of the lift car cautiously, her breath steaming in the freezing air.
This way.
Trying to recreate the path she'd taken all those years ago came hard. She walked slowly, fingers twitching furiously as she copied and forwarded the message from Herman. No telling when it would arrive, but the mesh networks and routing algorithms used by implants in the developed worlds would spool the mail until she got within personal network range of someone who could handshake with them, maybe even one of the remastered, if they'd had their systems upgraded for work out in the feral worlds. Frozen carpet creaked beneath her feet. Her pulse sped, and she glanced behind her, half expecting to hear the clicking clatter of claws. Portia, Jamil, and Franz, an unlikely triptych of scheming evil, kept her moving on. They were near the toilet.
Here,
she said, her voice small.
You're not going to... Franz
stopped.
What is it?
Portia demanded.
There's a body in there, I think.
Wednesday swallowed.
Jamil, check it out.
Jamil pushed past, taking his torch. Portia produced a smaller one, not much more than a glow stick, really. A minute of banging about, then he called,
She's right. I see a... Freeze-dried, I guess.
Explain. Portia thrust her face at Wednesday. I...
Wednesday shuddered convulsively.
Like the paper said, I left it 2 decks down, 3 segments over, she added. Jamil, we're going, Portia called.
You'd better not be wasting our time, she told Wednesday grimly. Wednesday led them back to the lift, which groaned and whined as it lowered them 2 more floors into the guts of the station. The gravity was higher there, but still not as harsh as she recalled. Probably there'd been some momentum transfer between the different counter-rotating sections. Even superconducting magnetic bearings are unable to prevent atmospheric turbulence from bleeding off energy over time. You have new mail, Wednesday read as the lift slowed.
Come on, Jamil said, pushing her forward. Let's get this over with.
Message received. We understand. Get word out via hub comms. Any means necessary. Martin. The gaping door and the darkness within loomed out of the darkness. The seed of a plan popped into Wednesday's head, unbidden.
I think I hid it in one of the cupboards. Can you give me a torch? She asked. Here. Portia passed her the light wand. Let's see if I remember where.
Wednesday ducked into the room, her heart hammering and her hands damp. She'd only get one chance to do this. Turning, she flashed the torch around overturned desks, open cupboards. There. She bent down and picked up a cartridge, crammed it into one pocket, scooped up a second and a third, then straightened up.
Wrong cupboard, she called.
Where had she left it? She looked around, saw a flash of something the color of dried blood.
Leather.
She pulled on it, and the bag slid into view.
Got it,
she said, stepping back out into the corridor. Give it here, Portia held out her hand.
Can't you wait until we get back to the hub?
Wednesday stared at her, bravado rising. The leather wallet with the diplomatic seal of the Moscow government on it, and the bulge where she'd stashed the data cartridge hung from one hand.
Now, Portia insisted. You promised.
Wednesday tightened her grip on the wallet and stared Portia in the eyes.
Going to break your word?
No. Hext blinked, then relaxed. No, I'm not. She looked like a woman awakening from a turbulent dream. You want to hold it until you see your friends. You go right ahead. I assume it is the right wallet?
And the data cartridge you took? Yes,
Wednesday said defensively, tightening her grip on it. The 3 riot cartridges she'd stolen felt huge in her hip pocket, certain to be visible. And while only Jamil had a gun slung in full sight, she had an edgy feeling that all the others were armed. They'd be carrying pistols, if nothing else. What was the old joke? Never bring a taser to an artillery duel? Then let's go visit the control center, Portia smiled. Of course, if you're wasting my time, you'll have made me kill one of your friends. But you wouldn't do that, would you?
Never bring a taser to an artillery duel, muttered Steffi, glancing between the compact machine pistol with full terminal guidance for its fin-stabilized bullets, not to mention a terahertz radar sight to allow the user to make aimed shots through thin walls, and the solid-state multispectral laser cannon with self-stabilizing turret platform and a quantum nucleonic generator backpack that could boil a liter of water in under 10 seconds. Regretfully, she picked the machine pistol, the laser's backpack being too unwieldy for the tight confines of a starship. But there was nothing stopping her from adding some other less cumbersome toys, was there? After all, none of the spectators at her special one-woman military fashion show would be writing reviews afterward. After 30 minutes, Steffi decided she was as ready as she'd ever be. The console by the door said that there was full pressure outside. Negligent of them, she thought, as she pointed her gun through the door and scanned the corridor. It looked clear, ghostly gray in the synthetic colors displayed by her eye-patch gun sight.
Right, here goes.
She moved toward the nearest intersection corridor with crew country, darting forward, then pausing to scan rooms to either side. Need a DC center console.
she decided. The oppressive silence was a reminder of the constant menace around her. If the hijackers wanted to lock down a ship, they could have depressurized it. That they hadn't meant that they'd be back. Before then, she had to eliminate any guards they'd left behind, erase her presence from their surveillance system, and regain control. Where are they? She asked herself, nerves on edge as she came close to the core staircase and lift utility ducts on this deck. They're not stupid. They'll have left a guard. They've got their surveillance net, so they must know I'm moving around up here. So where's the ambush going to be? Smart guards wouldn't risk losing her in a maze of passages and staterooms she knew better than they did. They'd simply lock the staircase doors between pressure zones and nail her as soon as she conveniently locked herself in a narrow moving box. Got it. Steffi ducked sideways into a narrow crew corridor and found herself facing the blank doors of a lift shaft. Readying herself, she hit the call button and crouched beside the doors, gun raised to scan. There were two possibilities. Either the lift car would contain an unpleasant surprise, or it would be empty, in which case they'd be waiting for her wherever she arrived. The gun showed her an empty cube before the doors opened. She moved instantly, jamming her keyring onto the emergency override pad on the control panel. Steffi clicked her tongue in concentration as she commanded the lift car to lower to motor maintenance position and open the doors. There was space on top of the pressurized car, a platform 1.5 meters wide and 1 meter high, ridged with cables and motor controllers leading to the prime movers at each corner of the box. She scrambled aboard, then hit the button for the training bridge deck. What happened next would depend on how many guards they'd left behind for her. If there were enough to monitor the ship's surveillance network as well as lay an ambush for her, she'd already lost. But she was gambling that her cover was still intact. As long as Svengali hadn't talked, she stood a chance because only a paranoid would take the same precautions over a junior flight lieutenant that they'd need to neutralize a professional assassin. The lift seemed to take forever to climb down the shaft. Steffi crouched in the middle of the roof, curling herself around her gun. Her eye patch showed her a gray rectangle, ghost shadows unfolding below it. The empty body of the lift descending into a tube of darkness too far away for the surface-piercing gun sights to see. Four decks, three, two. The lift slowed. Steffi changed her angle, aiming past the side of the lift where the doors opened, out into the corridor. Three targets, range 5 meters, group shots, gun to automatic. The machine pistol stuttered unevenly, and the recoil pushed at her wrists, jets of hot gas belching from the reaction control ducts around the barrel to center it on each target for precisely 4 shots. It was all over in a second. Steffi twitched around, hunting movement. Nothing. Just 3 indistinct lumps of gray against a background of rectangles. She hit the down button again, then opened the doors and glanced incuriously at the bodies. Her forehead wrinkled. There was blood everywhere, leaking from 2 strength-through-joy types she recognized from the dinner table and from... Max? She said aloud. Then she caught herself with a quiet snarl of fury. The motherfucking clown who planned this is going to pay with interest. She checked her gun readouts. Nothing was moving, up and down the corridor. She pushed through a crew-side doorway, oriented herself on a narrow corridor, and headed for the emergency room. Instinct stopped her just short of the corner, dropping to 1 knee with gun raised. Company? She wondered, motionless, trying to scan a comprehensible picture through the corner wall with tiny flicks of her fingertips. Yes? No? There was something there, and it moved. They fired simultaneously. Steffi sensed and heard the bullet zip past her head as her own gun went into spasm, squirting the remaining contents of his magazine through the wall in a surge of penetrating rounds. There was a damp sound from just around the corner, then a loud thud. Steffi reloaded mechanically, then made a final check, and stepped out into the corridor in front of the emergency bridge, stepping over the body of the guard. "Bridge systems, speak to me," she commanded. "Are you listening?"
"Authenticating. Welcome, Lieutenant Grace."
The bridge door slid open to reveal empty chairs, an air of deceptive normality.
"Conversational interface, please."
Steffi slid the door shut, then dropped into the pilot's chair and turned it to face the door, her gun at the ready. Identify all other personnel aboard ship, their locations and identities. If anyone moves toward this deck, let me know. Next, display on screen two all-system upgrades to passenger liaison network since previous departure. List whereabouts of all passengers traveling from and native to Tonto and New Peace. The walls began to fill up with information. Dump specifics to my stash. Steffi smiled happily. Are all officers authenticated by retinal scan? Good. Who authorized the last PLN reload? Good. Now, stand by to record a new job sequence.
Wednesday had walked over to the desk at the front of the evacuation assembly point as if she didn't have a care in the world. Rachel watched with growing misgivings as she spoke quietly to the fair-haired guy and they left together through the side exit into crew country. Martin leaned close. I hope she'll be all right. Half an hour later, it was their turn. The passengers were growing more restive, talking among themselves in a quiet buzz of nervous anticipation when a woman ducked through the door.
Rachel Mansour, Martin Springfield, please come forward.
Rachel gripped Martin's hand, squeezing out a message in a private code rusty from disuse. Rumbled. Ack. Go? Yes. She pulled him forward, pushing between a yakking family group and a self-important fellow in the robe of an Umbrian merchant banker. You want to talk? She asked, staring at the woman.
No, I want you both to come with me, she said casually.
Someone else wants to talk to you. Then we'll be happy to comply, Rachel said, forcing a smile. All this, she thought, and not even a briefing beforehand? For a moment she wished she was back in the claustrophobic tenement off the Place du Moulin waiting for the bomb squad. She tried not to notice Martin, whose nervousness was transparently obvious. Where do you want us to go?
Follow me.
The woman opened the side door and motioned them through. She had a friend waiting on the other side, a big guy who held his gun openly and watched them with incurious eyes. This way. She led them up a short staircase and out into a wide cargo tunnel. The air became increasingly chilly as they walked along it. Rachel shivered. She wasn't dressed for an excursion into a freezer hold.
Where are we? Keep it for the boss.
If you say so. Rachel tried to keep her voice light, as if this was a mystery excursion managed by the crew to keep bored passengers amused. They turned a corner onto a wider docking tunnel, then up a ramp that led into a vast twilight space. Floods glittered high above as the gravity did an alarmingly abrupt fade, dropping to less than a tenth of normal in the space of a few meters. We're outside the ship, she squeezed. Martin nodded. Not for the first time, she wished she dared use her implants to text him, but the risk of interception in the absence of a secured quantum channel was too great. If only I knew how complete their surveillance capability was, she told herself. If. She shivered violently and watched her breath steam before her face.
Far to go?
The blonde woman motioned her toward a doorway at the far side of the docking hub. Warm light shone from it.
Shit, it's cold out here, Martin muttered.
They hurried forward without any urging on the part of their guards.
Stop!
The one with the gun held up a hand as they neared the door. Matilda?
Yeah.
The blonde woman produced a bulky calm and spoke into it.
Matilda here, the two diplomats. Outside control, I'm sending them in.
She turned and glared at Rachel and Martin, waving at the door.
That way.
Where else? Rachel looked around as she entered the room. It was brightly lit, and a whine from overhead suggested that a local aircon unit was fighting a losing battle against the chill. The man with the gun was behind them, and for a sickening moment, as she saw the largely empty room, she wondered if he was meant to kill them and leave their bodies there. Then a door slid open in the wall opposite.
Go in. Gunboy waved them forward. It's a lift.
Okay, I'm going. Rachel stepped forward. Martin followed her, with Gunboy trailing to the rear. The doors closed, and the lift began to move, sinking toward the high G levels of the station. It squealed as it went, long idle wheels protesting as they clawed along toothed rails that had chilled below normal operating temperatures. They descended in silence, Rachel leaning against Martin in the far corner of the cargo lift from the guard. The guard kept his weapon on them the whole time, seemingly immune to distraction. The lift juddered to a halt and its door slid open on a well-lit corridor. There were more fans, humming and grating at overload. The chill was less extreme, and when the guard waved them toward an open door at the other end of the passage, Rachel couldn't see her breath. "Where are we?" she asked.
"Waiting for the boss. Go right in."
Gunboy looked bored and annoyed, but not inclined toward immediate violence. Rachel tensed, then nodded, and went right in. There was a sign on the open door she read as she passed it, "Director's Suite." Well, what a surprise, she thought tiredly, mentally kicking herself for not having seen this coming. Then her implant twitched. She had to suppress a start as she blinked rapidly. New mail, here, of all places? How? She read it quickly, almost trancing out, almost missing the deep pile carpet, the withered brown trees in their pots to either side of the big wood-topped desk, and the door leading into the inner office. Then more mail came in, this time a reply from Martin. She glanced at him sharply, then turned round to stare at Gunboy. The goon leaned against the wall just inside the doorway. "Who is this boss of yours?" she asked. "Do we have to wait long?"
"You wait until she gets here."
The fan in the office rattled slightly, pumping tepid air in to dilute the chill. A thin layer of dust covered the desk, the visitors' chairs, an empty water cooler.
"Mind if I sit down?" asked Martin. "Be my guest."
Gunboy raised an ironic eyebrow, and Martin sat down hastily before he changed his mind. Rachel stepped sideways in front of him, and he slipped an arm protectively around her waist under the hem of her jacket.
"Can you tell us anything?"
Rachel asked quietly as Martin slipped something into her waistband.
"Like what this is all about?"
"No."
"Okay," Rachel sighed, "if that's how you want it."
She sat down on the chair to Martin's right and leaned against him, putting her left arm behind his shoulder.
"So they're not monitoring the station protocols for traffic yet," she thought, hungry for hope. "If they were, that mail from Wednesday would have set them off."
She let her arm drop behind Martin's back, then twisted her wrist round and fumbled with the object in her waistband until it went up her sleeve to mate with its companion. Click. She felt, rather than heard, the noise. The gadget made handshake with her implants, and a countdown timer appeared in her vision, the number of seconds it would take for the gel phase fuel cell to power up and the gadget to begin assembling itself. She seldom felt so naked in her life. If they'd extended the surface-piercing radar surveillance network from the ship into this room, 7 shades of alarm would be going off right now, and Gunboy would put a bullet through her face long before the gadget was ready. Otherwise, a creaking whine from the corridor announced the arrival of another lift car. A few seconds later, Matilda appeared, this time leading Frank. Frank was in a bad way, his skin ashen, and his hands taped together in front of him. He looked around, eyes unreadable, wearing the same clothes he'd been in when Martin had interviewed him. They were the worse for wear. "Sit," Matilda told him, pointing to the chair next to Rachel. She produced a box cutter. "Hold out your hands. We've got the girl. Piss us off, and you'll never see her again." Frank cleared his throat.
"I understand,"
he grunted, rubbing his wrists. He glared at her resentfully.
"What now?"
"You wait." Matilda took a step back to stand beside Gunboy.
"Lining up all your targets, huh?"
She cast Martin a very ugly look. "Wait for the boss. She won't be long now."
"You're Frank, aren't you? What happened?"
Rachel whispered to him. Frank grunted and rubbed at his wrists again.
"Got me early, in my room. You're his partner?"
He jerked his chin at Martin.
"Thought I was the only one at first. Where are we?"
"Old Newfie, Wednesday's station. Listen, we hid her, but they had you." She went with him.
Shit.
He met her eyes with an expression of terrible resignation.
You know what this means.
Rachel gave a slight nod in the direction of the guards.
Don't say it.
You can say anything you like,
Matilda called, grinning maliciously at him.
We have complete freedom of speech. Anything you want to say, we will listen to.
Fuck you.
Frank glared at her.
Shut up, Gunboy pointed his machine pistol at Frank.
For a tense moment, Rachel was sure he would say something. The seconds stretched out into an infinitely long moment as Frank and the guard stared. Then Frank slumped back in his chair.
It's okay. I can let go.
Frank glanced at her and yawned, his jaw muscles crackling.
I'm used to it. Was used to it.
He rubbed his hands together, making small, circling movements. Rachel tried not to show any sign of having noticed his frantic control gestures.
Someone's got a backlog of email, she guessed. Or itchy fingers.
They sat in silence for a couple of minutes. Then a buzzing noise from along the corridor announced the imminent arrival of yet another self-propelled lift car. Rachel looked round automatically. The doors opened, many footsteps moving toward the office in the curious broken rhythm of fractional G. First in was a skinny, edgy-looking man, then a woman of a certain age, her eyes cold and her expression satisfied. Then Wednesday, walking in front of a guy with long hair in a ponytail, holding a boxy urban combat weapon. Her expression was ugly when she saw Frank looking like a morning after wreck.
Rachel Mansour from the UN, I presume?
The woman walked behind the station manager's desk, turned the chair around and sat down in it.
I'm very pleased to meet you.
She smiled as she reached into an outer pocket and placed a compact pistol on the desk in front of her, its barrel pointed at Rachel.
I see you've already met our young runaway. That will make things much simpler. Just one more person to come, then I think we'll begin.
Irrevocable. They'd untaped his hands, leaning back, ignoring the guard. Frank had twitched his rings, switching his optic implants and ear pickups to record promiscuously. There was no point missing anything, even his own execution. Bing! He jumped a little when the mail flag came up, something from Wednesday. But the guard hadn't noticed, none of them noticed. Just typical remastered foot soldiers, obedient and lethal. He read the message and felt his palms go damp. He was glad he was sitting down. So now, Wednesday's invisible friend is sending me email? But he's got to use her as a relay because she's the only one of us with a setup compatible with this station? Shit. Frank reflected bleakly on the need for bandwidth. If there's some way to get that report out, wherever we are, we can't all just vanish, can we? But the truth was anything but reassuring. Liners did vanish from time to time. And if this was the hijacking it appeared to be, bearing all the slick signs of remastered covert ops, the sly subversion of emergency reflexes, then there was no way word would ever get out. Bing! More mail from Wednesday had arrived, broadcast to him and Rachel and Martin.
What?
Some sort of code attachment, a new interface protocol for his implant to talk to the station's ether.
He tried to keep his face impassive as he mentally crossed his fingers and loaded the untrusted executable.
Then the newcomers arrived. Frank stared at them. His world narrowed suddenly to a single, panicky choice, a flashback going back decades. He took it all in. Wednesday sullen between two guards. The woman in front holding the leather satchel, smiling at him. He remembered the bright sunlight on the rooftop of the Demosthenes Hotel, the acrid smell of propane stoves and dog shit wafting on the breeze across downtown Samara. Alice turning toward the parapet with the camera drone in her hands. The woman, again. Blonde destruction on the day it rained bullets, the day when everything changed. Frank blinked up at her.
Oh, holy shitting fucking Christ, it's you!
Increasing my little piggy count this time.
Her smile broadened, turning ugly at the edges.
We really must stop bumping into each other like this, mustn't we?
Shit, shit, shit.
Frank felt nauseous. The hot smell of Alice's blood was in his nose. The roar and screams of the crowd as the bullets began spattering into them.
You were in Samara, on New Peace. Who are you?
He barely noticed Wednesday's jolt of surprise from the other side of the room as he focused in on the woman's face.
I'm you, Portia Hext, Department Secretariat of Division 4 of the Department of External Environmental Control, Planetary Dominion of New Peace. The U is short for Übermensch or Übermädchen, take your pick. Her smile was as wide as a shark's gape. At this point in the proceedings, I'm supposed to gloatingly tell you my evil plans before I kill you. Then, if you believe the movies, a steel-jawed hero is supposed to erupt through the walls and teach me the error of my ways with extreme prejudice. She snorted. Except there aren't any steel-jawed heroes within 16 light-years of this station. A hint of mirth in her eyes. Not even that third lieutenant you've got squirreled away, at least not once the guards are through with her. Frank felt his nails digging into the palms of his hands. His vision went gray and pixelated for a few seconds, and his heart pounded before he realized that it was the firmware patch from Wednesday loading on his implant's virtual machine, combined with a raw, primal rage. Why are you telling us this? Rachel asked quietly.
Because I like a fucking audience. Hext sat up.
And it's going to be over soon anyway.
She stopped smiling.
Oh, about the let me tell you everything before I kill you bit, I'm not going to kill you. You might wish I had, but I'm not. As soon as I've got this station on auxiliary internal power and disabled external communications, all the passengers and crew are coming aboard. It won't be much fun, but you'll be able to last for the couple of months it takes for a rescue ship to reach you. Even you, Frank. A flicker of a smile. No re-education camps here. You're getting the VIP treatment. Frank stayed quiet, his guts tense.
Fuck, we're still on the net,
he realized. The station's causal channels were still working. This packet from Herman, whoever he was a protocol converter. With gathering disbelief, Frank realized that he wasn't cut off anymore. He could send mail, or even pipe his raw recording feed straight to Eric back home there to do whatever he could with the posthumous spool.
Take it like you give it, you fuckers, he thought triumphantly.
His hands folded together against the cold. Nobody saw him twisting his rings, setting up the narrowcast stream to his inbox on Earth.
I am a camera.
Steffi watched the rerun of Svengali's execution in grainy monochrome, tracking it through the labyrinthine maze of the surveillance system take spooled by the ship's memory as the bridge systems hummed around her, rewinding the vessel's software model of itself back to the state it had been in before the remaster lobotomized it. She'd thought she was angry when the double-crossing clients ran amok, angry when she'd spent long hours crouched in a dark closet space with the soft shoe shuffle of guards outside the door. But she hadn't been angry at all, not in comparison to her current state of mind. Livid with rage, just barely began to describe it. She'd worked with Sven for just short of a decade. In many ways, they'd been closer than a married couple, herself the pretty face up front and visible, and he the fixer in the background, oiling the gears and reeling in the contracts. He'd found her when she was a teen punk, heading for rehab or a one-way trip to the exile colonies, seen through the rust and grime to the hard metal beneath, and polished it to a brilliant shine. In the early years, she'd adored him back before she matured enough to see him as he really was. Theirs hadn't been a sexual relationship, beyond an early exploratory fumbling. But it was a partnership based on need and mutual respect and blood. And now, just as they'd been on the edge of their greatest coup, I'm going to find you, and you're going to wish you'd committed suicide first, she told the face frozen to the screen. And then, her eyebrows furrowed, I'm going to do what?
Seffi leaned back her chair and closed her eyes, forcing the tight ball of rage back into the recesses of her skull, out of the way until it was needed.
Where do I stand?
She had the key to their bank accounts if she needed it, and she had a couple of other keys picked up here or there. She'd been in an office in Turku and a roadside rest stop on Iger's World, and a house on Earth, too, all in the past 6 months. Sven had done his homework before taking on the job, explained the alarming consequences of success to her, and the importance of finding the keys. There'd been no point rummaging by the roadside, but she had two of them in her pocket. Now, keys to the gates of hell itself. That had to count for something, didn't it? And if the dim-witted UN diplomats didn't know who she was, then all that left was the remastered.
If I can take them out of the picture, I can become Lieutenant Steffi Grace, and nobody will know any different, she realized. Or I can try for the third key and access to a Muscovite diplomatic channel.
She began to smile, her lips pulling back from her teeth in an expression very close to a feral snarl.
See how they like it when I derail their plans.
She sat up and leaned toward the pilot console. Bridge systems, get me the full station package on our current port. Display dockside schematics on window 4. Do you have access to the loading bay external cameras? Do you have access to the station communications network? Good. Record new job sequence. Activation key, Rosebud.
This ends Disc 12.